everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, and far too much reality today.
Too far below the surface.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the Oscar-winning movie Spotlight. Won the Oscar, the most recent Oscar, 2016, which is about some difficult things for Catholics. But mostly it's a movie about an investigative journalist team that called themselves Spotlight at the Boston Globe.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of a, we call it a journalism movie, you know, in the tradition of All the President's Men and others, you know, uncovering facts and, you know, the excitement is trying to get the story out.
Yeah, it's almost like a detective story in that way. You're watching the team.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Follow the clues.
Right, right.
And it's quite a, it's really a good movie. And I would say, again, thank you. Because it's a movie that when it came out, because it's about uncovering the sex scandals in Boston with the priesthood, that we knew we should watch, but we were avoiding watching because it seemed like it was going to have either stuff that was too graphic or too painful. And they handled it so delicately that it really wasn't like that. It really was watching a good journalism movie. And so in that way, similar to Noah, which I absolutely loved and wouldn't have watched if you hadn't asked for it, you know, whenever it came out.
Yeah.
I have to thank you.
Well, you're welcome. That's great. That's nice. Yeah. And I watched this movie after it won the Oscar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, well, I got to watch this movie. And so I did. And I found it excellent. It really is a terrific movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it was difficult. And I really liked the fact that it wasn't graphic. You mentioned that. And that's one of the things that kept me from, you know, watching it before it won the Oscar was I didn't really want to see more scenes like that. I mean, I've seen many.
Yeah.
In various movies. And I thought, oh, you know, that's what I thought this movie was going to be. But it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is based on the true story of Spotlight. And I think the stories broke in 2002 or so, if I remember right, because 9/11 was in the movie.
Yeah, it was January, they said, after 9/11.
Okay.
Because they were saying after Christmas we'll bring it out, you know,
that's right.
The stories out. So.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I'm not sure what to say about the movie in summary other than what we've already said. Again, there's a journalism team, really excellent actors, Mark Ruffalo, Michael Keaton, Rachel McAdams. I loved Liv Schreiber in it.
Oh, he was so good.
He was.
Stanley Tucci, also. Yeah,
also
really
excellent.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I would say is that I think the thing to keep in mind if you're watching this and you're Catholic is there is this tendency partway into it to start identifying not with the church necessarily, but as a Catholic, you can be conflicted over the whole thing. I mean, it's, you know, when these scandals broke, they were horrifying. And there, it is not a perfect movie. There are places where if you know enough details about what was going on the Catholic side, not in Boston necessarily, but in general, you can say, oh, well, they've kind of misrepresented this or just said this so simply. I think maybe not misrepresented. They've said this so simply that you forget that there are other details to be told. But I think what you have to do is just kind of let that go. You can think about it later. There's a bit of an agenda, but it's not hammered. And let it wash over you because if nothing else, this is how the world in or the U.S. sees the Catholic Church right now. And this is the reality of what we have to deal with. The nuances are not there for most people. And it's good to know the other facts, and we'll probably talk about some of that later.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the brutal fact of what we're dealing with, of trust broken. And to me, the summary of this movie of on the secondary level is this is a look at what sin does.
Yeah.
You start off thinking, oh, it's just this little thing and it, you know, it's about me, and it ricochets and it ripples and it affects everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be definitely watched as a journalism movie, and it can definitely be watched as a spiritual movie that way, I would say.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, and I agree with that. It's difficult, you know, when you watch something like this that is directly attacking. It's not an attack. These are truthful things, and that's the difficult thing. It's like, you know, my reaction is defense. But the thing is, you know, these are facts. So, there's a lot of facts in this movie that are undeniable. And any attempt that you make to say, well, you know, they got this piece wrong or this piece, you know, can be construed as, well, you know, we're trying to justify some actions, which, you know, I want to say here at the outset, we're absolutely not going to do, because what happened was horrible. And there's no getting around that. And I feel deeply for the victims. I just can't imagine.
Yeah. It's basically, if you take away the religion part of it, it is a picture of unmasking predators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they were finding the wolves in the midst of our society, and they definitely needed to be done. Yeah. And I know that they worked closely with the reporters in developing the script. I was reading a little bit about it. There's a website called History Versus Hollywood, and they don't necessarily go into all the details of every bit of it, but they'll say, you know, did this really happen, or was this person feeling like this? And they'll say yes or no and cite their source on why they're saying that. And one of the things they said is all the reporters were kind of wary of this whole movie. And they all were on board by the end because they said, this is how I felt. This is what was happening. So
yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah.
And
it felt like true to me.
Yeah. There's a bit of an agenda, but I don't think it's necessarily obvious. And I think the other thing is, in a sense, it's kind of allowable because this leaves you angry. Hmm. And that anger is justified.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. In the aftermath of it, you know, the Catholic Church is being attacked because of it, which, you know, I can't say is unjustified, although the way that some folks are using it is not.
Right.
And as a Catholic, you know, it is devastating to think that this went on. In your church, you know.
Well, the interesting thing to me, just to divert for one second, is that when I was coming into the church, at one point they mentioned some of the priests in other parts of the country, and they said cause. And I went, yeah, that was Dallas. Mm-hmm. And here we had, I think it was highly publicized, at least it was publicized here, of course, the Rudy Cause trial. And he was a priest that had been moved around a lot. And while I was coming into the church, that was all going on. It was being held in Fort Worth instead of Dallas to try and get a less unbiased jury and all this kind of thing. But people would ask me later, how could you become Catholic when that was going on? And I was like, I was oblivious to that because what was going on was my internal journey with God. And I guess it wasn't that I was oblivious, but I just kind of looked at it and went, people are people. There are horrible people everywhere. And there are people who are proud and powerful everywhere. And that was our bishop. Bishop Grauman was like the worst about that. And it made me think of the Renaissance popes, the bishops of the church, the princes of the church, you know, kind of thing. And so to me, I didn't take that as the way the Catholic Church was overall, you know. I just looked at it and went, it's kind of an isolated thing here. well, Boston was obviously worse. And I'm saying something to my husband about that. And he goes, well, yeah, because Dallas isn't Boston. Dallas isn't this hugely Catholic community where they've got this big history of Catholicism. Catholicism is the outsider here, or has been for a really long time. And so that kind of, there was one priest instead of, you know, this huge string of them.
Mm-hmm.
So your experience varies too, depending on where you're from. I was talking to somebody from Abilene, Texas yesterday, and she had seen it, and she said she was stunned because she didn't understand the scope of what was going on, because I don't think they had anything like that in Abilene. So it depends on how close you are to it too, and what, if you realize what it means. So the movie's good on that level because it's like ripping the Band-Aid off of an abscess.
Yeah. 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 And I like that you brought up, you know, well, you know, coming into the church at that time, you know, that's when I was becoming active again too, from a long time away.
Oh,
was in the early 2000s, which is right around here. But you know, there's, you know, Christopher Hitchens and them, you know, he wrote a book called God Is Not Great. And it was pretty much a string of, look at these Christian people acting badly. Mm-hmm. And isn't this the absolute most horrible thing that you can think of? And therefore, religion needs to be eliminated, you know, as if there were, you know, no other isms or collectives in humans. You know, religion is the cause of all the ills. Wars and everything like that. You know, it just evolved from that. But the truth is, you know, it's, you know, you're judging a philosophy by people that aren't following that philosophy, right? You know, because we know that if we follow the Christian philosophy as presented by Christ in so many, in a lot of different ways, you know, small ways and big ways, it doesn't result in the kinds of things that Spotlight revealed.
Exactly.
Right. It's a failure to align yourself with that philosophy. You know, the truth and the life that is the problem and the cause of the pain. It's, these aren't people that followed their own teachings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, in that book, that's what it did. You know, he didn't talk at all about what the teachings are, at least in the Christian part of it.
Yeah.
He did take a hammer to the Mormons. There's a whole big chapter in there about that, because Mitt Romney was running for president at the time.
Oh,
and
okay.
He was horrified by that. Anyway, that's really what I wanted to say. You know, how can I still be Catholic when this happened? You know, is a question that you get, or I get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, well, these are not people that are acting in alignment with that. I don't know, perhaps the biggest problem here is that the bishops, well, in this case, Law and other bishops in the and other bishops in the Catholic Church were acting to protect the way that they saw was protecting the church, right? Which was the incorrect response, right?
Yeah, they. And in that sense, what they show is, well, not, of course, there's the problem of a totally wrong perspective on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We had the reading just last week in the gospel. It was Jesus before he goes off for the passion. And he says to his disciples, I give you a new commandment, love one another. Mm-hmm. As I have loved you, so you also should love one another. This is how all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Yeah.
And by just protecting the church, not only are they not doing that, they're acting as if they have no faith that God will protect the church, that it's not God's church, it's their church.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
yeah,
Jesus didn't say, I better stick around with these disciples and make sure they do it right. He's like, hasta la vista, the ascension, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Spirit's with you.
Yeah, that's right.
Do your best.
Exactly.
So the other thing I would say is the thing that I tend to counter that with, although religion is so different and it's recognized differently and rightly than patriotism, is every time my government does something I can't stand, I don't leave the country. I stay and try to make it better.
That's true. Even right now.
Oh, my gosh. I'm left with very, very few harbors, maybe no harbors. I'm just going to have to hunker down.
Oh, man.
Get
it's
out
difficult.
My
it's difficult.
Tinfoil helmet. And.
But no, that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. Yeah. You know, some people say that. They come out and say, I'm going to move to Canada if, you know, I've mostly it's on the liberal side of things. But I, you know, I think Susan Sarandon has threatened to move a few times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness.
Personal prejudice showing there.
So yeah. That's a really
still not done it.
Yeah. But that's a nice way to put that. Yeah. You know, and that's, you know, there's a lot of church reformers, right? That, it's like, you know, when you had the Reformation, mm-hmm. you had Luther, right, who mm-hmm. left the church and pounded this list on the thing. And then you had people in the church that were like, we need to fix this thing.
Yeah, you
and
had.
And there are things that we need to fix. And they didn't leave. They stayed and they took care of it.
At the same time, you had St. Thomas More and Erasmus. Can't remember his first name. And they had both been writing very much the same thing about the church that Luther criticized. But the minute he left the church and started taking it on, they're like, yes, but where else are you going to go? You can't just split off. That just causes more trouble.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of that same thing. Don't you want the good people in the church trying to fix it?
Yeah.
So anyway, we're not exactly far from the movie. But we're,
yeah, well, you know, the movie just brings up so much, you know, and it's hard to kind of walk through this movie because really what it is a, you know, some facts were revealed and they, you know, there are some kind of overarching things though. The first thing that comes to my mind is Liv Schreiber's character.
The editor.
Yeah. So what happened... He came in as a brand new editor for the Boston Globe from elsewhere. I think he came from Florida.
Right.
And he read an editorial or a column that was written by somebody about a priest named Gagin. And in the editorial meeting, he said, has anybody read this column and are we following up on it? And he immediately realized... that I'm looking, I've got some bias here or some people that are, I'm searching for words here, but it's like, you know, he's got, everybody in the room had some connection to the Catholic Church. Like there was some ex-Catholics, some people were anti, right?
Mm-hmm.
But mostly they were saying, oh, we looked into that. The church denied it. He, you know, somebody else, the lawyer Garabedian, who they thought was kind of nutty, mm-hmm. he says he's got this evidence, but we really didn't consider it because we looked into it and they said this. And then we moved on.
Yeah, they were taking the attitude everyone took, which is, it's not very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a small deal and this will go away. This
right.
is one case.
Yeah.
Whereas he's like, but you haven't actually asked the right questions or any
right.
questions.
So so the idea that it took an outsider to come in to look at that differently
mm-hmm.
Is interesting to me. You know, so everybody, you know, we all grew up in Boston. We know what the church is. We know this. We know that. It wasn't worth looking into because it's just a minor thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then this person comes from outside and he sees this completely differently. And says that we need to be looking into this. And then, you know, the next thing he said, well, we need to look at the documents that were presented with blah, blah, blah. And they said, well, how do we do that? And he says, well, in Florida, we would go to court. And they said, you're going to sue the Catholic Church? I mean, everybody had that reaction. And it was
right.
like, are you kidding me? You're going to do that? And he's like, well, that's not technically what we're doing. We're were going to get papers released, you know, and then somebody said, well, the Catholic Church is going to interpret that as you suing them. And he said something like, noted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
You know? So, I mean, he was, you know, just being outside the community allowed him to see something wrong.
Yeah, and to show them where their own native assumptions were wrong.
Yeah.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about the thing of him saying, you know, well, you're going to, them saying, you're going to sue the church? And it's just like, so?
Yeah. That's, you know, what we
and,
do,
and
yeah.
This is the most hard-hitting investigative team they've got. And even they are just immersed in the local culture.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even there was, I think Mark Ruffalo's character was sort of actively anti-religious. Though, yeah, I mean, he wasn't like on a soapbox most of the time. But, you know, when asked if he was Catholic, you know, he said no. Not so much or something like that. And everybody else was like, well, I used to be. And someone else said, well, I go with my Nana now and then. But he was like, no. You know, it was just like, you know, he was not wanting any part of that. And he would always, you know, during the show, too, he was always willing to go after it harder than the other ones, I felt. The other ones kind of had to be led.
Yeah, although I kind of, you're right, I didn't think about that as being directed against the church. I just took that as he was like, are we going to do this story? Are we going to do it? Are we going to do it? He was just the active, let's go get somebody.
Right.
Reporter is how I took that as part of his personality, which may or may not be. But interestingly, one of the things they did in this movie that I really liked was they took faith seriously.
Yeah.
They didn't say, oh, these stupid people for letting this happen. Well, you know, like about the people themselves. So that when they were having late in the movie, the conversation between, now I can't remember any of the reporters' names, but Rachel McAdams and Mark Ruffalo, and they're out on the balcony, and the impact of the magnitude of the numbers is hitting them and what actually happened. And they're both bemoaning the fact that they can't believe anymore like they used to. And Mark Ruffalo, who was so against the church, was saying, well, I left it, but somehow in the back of my mind, I'm realizing I always felt like I'd go back someday. Yeah. Now I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read about the real reporter, that's exactly how he felt. And now he is so anti-religion. And that was another thing about this is what sin does. Those priests should have already known they needed help. Now we all fall into these pits where we do. Hopefully we don't do anything that reprehensible, but we do things we're ashamed of. But even if they weren't, they obviously weren't thinking about the people they were abusing, but no one's thinking about everybody else. Look at the loss of faith. Look at the driving people away from God.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, Dante had a lot of the Renaissance, or not Renaissance popes, that was later, but he had a lot of popes in hell.
Mm.
And it wasn't for stuff like this, because that wasn't what he was after them for. It was for simony, which is taking money to appoint church offices and things like that. But these are the things where you see like that one priest on the porch who didn't understand at all the impact of what he'd done and was just mouthing lame excuse after another, which he seemed to have incorporated somehow into truth. And you just go, well, I can't say if he really believes this stuff or not, but holy moly.
Yeah.
Where's the realization?
I felt that was bringing up a point that I disagree with as well. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that these reporters did on the way to revealing information is they contacted a guy, I think his name was Sipe.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
right
on the telephone? Mm-hmm, so that they had two telephone conversations with him. And he apparently was a psychotherapist who used to be a priest and was involved somehow with rehabilitation of priests or therapy or whatever. So he did, you know, his own research and everything and came up with all these numbers. But one of the things that he said during that phone conversation was that many priests are kind of sexually and emotionally stunted people.
Oh, because of celibacy.
Exactly. And therefore, so I thought that that priest that she met on the porch was sort of an illustration of his point.
Oh.
Because that person was not right. I mean, clearly, I mean, if to do what he did, he was not right anyway, but his portrayal was of a almost a simpleton, a very dumb person who kind of was mentally not complete.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he's just saying, we'll see, you know, priests can be that way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which is not my experience.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things that the movie had its biases, and one of the biases was against celibacy, because that was brought up without any other, you know, I would have liked to have seen at the end of the movie, they have the little, you know, on white on black, here's some facts.
Hmm.
Yeah. And there was nothing at all about, well, the Catholic Church has now taken these measures. The Catholic Church, Pope Benedict, you know, did this, that, you know, they're beginning to address it. They just make it look like the veil of silence has gone down and nothing's happening. And so I understand they're telling that particular story, but if they go on, and they obviously hated Cardinal Law, and I can't blame them. I mean, talk about sanctimonious sounding prince of the church.
It's difficult to like him.
Yeah.
I still don't understand.
No. Well, my, you know, the way my husband put it, it was kind of interesting because at one point, and the thing, one of the things I really liked about this is it was continually brought back to, it's not just the church. There is the larger community that has failed all these people.
Right.
The paper, it was repeatedly shown how one of the least likable lawyers there said right after this other case that happened earlier, Father Preston, I think it was, he goes, I sent you guys a list of 20 priests who were problems. It got buried. And they said, oh, where's that list? And he goes, go look at your files. I sent it to you. You ignored it.
Yeah.
And time after time, that gets brought up. And so, and there are other people, you know, principals of schools, all this stuff. Everybody's kind of complicit. And there are all the reasons for it. You know, I was new to this job. I didn't really pay attention. I was doing this favor for this friend. I didn't think about it this way. Well, we've all got those times in our life. And at one point, when it comes up in a final meeting about, we had this list and we did this story and it was buried and no one ever looked at it again. And it turns out it was Michael Keaton's character, the head of the spotlight team. And he's like, I was new to the job. I'm guilty like everyone else. And the editor says, look, a lot is going on in everybody's life. We can't always know what's the important thing to pay attention to. We get distracted. And he's very kindly not giving people an out, but just saying, here's the perspective. And my husband started saying, well, that's actually the case for a lot of these cases, you know, where people didn't know. And I felt like, no, that's not really, well, at least in the Boston situation, it's not true. They know exactly what they're doing and they know who the victims are and everything. But what I did remember is that back in the 70s, which is evidently when this was really rife, it's like after the 70s, it started really going down.
Yeah.
Is that everybody was blindsided because no one understood this proliferation of these problems. And so the psychotherapy of the time didn't give them very good advice. It wasn't advanced enough in understanding this problem to really address it properly. And by the time they figured it out, it had already, the moving around and the therapy and everything had been going on so long that what we were wondering is if they were like, well, now we can't admit it. So it's that slippery slope of how much are you going to protect your reputation and the church versus how much are you going to tell the truth and do the right thing?
Yeah.
And it's, so it's that – it's the same problem that the newspaper had, but it was handled absolutely wrongly.
Yeah, good point. And yeah, once you make that first step, then you're making the next step to protect the other step. And then the next thing you know, it's 20 years later.
Yeah. And it's a culture of covering up.
Right. And protection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Protection of reputation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also that accepting what the authorities tell you, which is what you pointed out that the Spotlight team was doing. They're like, oh, well, this guy's crazy. This guy's a nut. This guy's, you know, oh, yeah, he's bugged us. Mm-hmm. And then they start talking to him and going, oh, there's actually something there when we pay attention.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, another interesting aspect of what they were doing is how they revealed the story to the public. And I thought it was really interesting how, again, the editor character was, and then eventually Michael Keaton's character, he actually withheld things from the editor because he didn't want to reveal things too soon. And the reason that they were wanting to hold on to things is because they ended up with a goal that they needed to make sure that what they revealed would cause change. They wanted, they didn't want to just write a story about this one priest because they felt that, you know, cardinal law would just be able to say, well, this is an isolated thing. And then if they came out with it a little bit at a time like that, they could just continue to move forward and perhaps that wouldn't change anything. But they kept being told, well, keep digging, because I think that this is systemic. And they kept saying, we got to attack the system.
The institution.
Right. So then that's what they ended up doing. They got all their facts right and they got everything that they needed. And then they revealed it. And then they started to write a series of stories. And it was undeniable, right? Law was not able to say, you know, this was that, or, you know, he was not able to say anything that wasn't factual. And, I thought that was interesting because I've had different opinions on journalism over the years. I remember one time during the first Gulf War, so I was pretty young. He was a photographer, and for some reason, this interview stuck in my mind. He was being interviewed somewhere and they were showing his photographs of the war in Afghanistan. And they asked him, you know, are you going to go back? And he said, no, I'm not going to go back because what I have done has not changed anybody's minds. And I immediately thought, well, is that his job? Is that what someone should go into photojournalism for, to change people's minds? You know, to me, it was like, well, what the job is facts. I want, as a person, I want a news source that is giving me factual information. And that's the most important thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now here in Spotlight, these folks got an agenda as they started to understand what was happening. They got an agenda that I felt was absolutely correct. You know, what they were doing, what they said, okay, we need to make sure we have everything that we need to affect change. We're going through some horrible things here. We're revealing some horrible things and we need to make sure that what we do changes what's happening. And I thought that that was an acceptable and good thing. So, I'm kind of thinking about that stuff in my head. The movie made me think about it. I still think that journalism needs to give us facts, which these folks did, which was excellent. And I don't know that there's enough of this investigative stuff going on right now. I certainly don't feel that there's a news source that I really trust, that I can read and say, yeah, that's true. And I believe it. And, you know, to find someone who claims to be unbiased is, kind of unheard of in the United States right now, as far as journalism goes.
And I don't know if you can find somebody without bias, because as people, we are biased.
I think we are too. Yeah. Yeah.
The movie, in a sense, makes an argument. I hadn't thought about that till I was just listening to you, but they make an argument for viewing reporting investigatively, because the flaw in what Michael Keaton did is he had the thing about the 20 priests and he buried it in Metro. And when they were talking about, we should say that we won this case, no, bury it in Metro. Well, burying it in Metro means we'll just report it and not call it to anyone's attention. Mm-hmm. And that means they know that people are skipping over reading the factual stuff. Because any normal reader of the paper, if you saw the headline they had from the clip, which is 20 priests, you know, blah, 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 shouldn't they be writing letters to the editor going, hello, what's going on with this? Or asking somebody about it? But nobody did. And so it's interesting, because the bias that we see in the movie, and like I say, it's a great movie. These are smaller things that we're talking about in many ways, is toward investigative journalism. And there are legitimate reasons for both kinds, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
The investigative ones are like watchdogs, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and it certainly illustrates the purpose of journalism, why it's here, you know?
Yeah, why you need the press.
Why we need the press. We need the press as one of the pillars of government, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going through some great, great change right now with the internet and everything. And we still don't know how all this is going to fall out, but it's desperately needed.
Yeah, and they kind of briefly address that in a way, because you wouldn't maybe have had this over the internet. I don't know. Yeah. Can you? I mean, because they'd show them. I loved the shot of the Boston Globe building, and it's got a huge billboard for AOL. So, and they had talked about, you know, the internet is cutting into our subscriptions, and what are we going to do? Yeah. And they're trying to deal with that also.
Yeah. There was one point Michael Keaton came up with the idea of, well, let's go through all of the records and find out who's been moved around and all this stuff. And somebody says, well, that's going to take a really long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and then he starts to build a spreadsheet, and it's like, what is that? A spreadsheet. but yeah, you know, when we think of today, it's like, you know, to do that job is really quite easy. But back then it was really hard.
Well, and also
they're like,
all
this is just in books in our basement.
Yeah. But the thing was, is they had all those books.
They did.
All these resources you didn't expect, like the year-to-year books from the diocese on where priests were assigned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you wonder if, based on the fact that the church got all these documents sealed so you couldn't get access to them, if they would have yanked that stuff offline once they realized what was there.
Right.
And it wouldn't have been available.
Yep. Yeah. Well, there were two things that I wanted to mention as I look at my notes that I thought were odd for an Oscar-winning movie, because it felt like flaws to me.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is... And maybe there was a point to this, but several times, well, I say several, at least three, characters were told that the church is everywhere and it's going to come after you, right? Yeah. But then nothing materialized. It was almost like a foreshadowing of something that never happened. None of the characters in here got attacked by the Catholic Church in any way or even... you know, trying to influence or whatever. But I thought that, did you feel the same way?
I noticed that also. I kept thinking, well, they won't throw a bomb through a window, but this is the feeling you had, is like the church is going to get you and then hang up.
Right.
And it's like, what? What? And then the most that happens is the head of Catholic Charities asked Michael Keaton to come to the bar and have a drink, where he doesn't even really say much except to go, we're doing an awful lot of good. You're forgetting about the good the church is doing. And Michael Keaton doesn't even bother going, that has nothing to do with this.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring that up in connection with this, because yeah, maybe that's possible, because it could be intentional if it wanted to illustrate maybe that they were being fought by people that knew what was going on and maybe wanted it to be public.
I did not get that feeling at all.
Okay, because I did feel that, you know, well, the Catholic Charities guy, he didn't full court press Michael Keaton. It was like he said his stuff and then he retreated, but he wasn't like adamant. You know what I mean? It was like,
it was poorly written, if that's what they were trying to show.
Okay.
But I also think what it might show is, now that I think about it, they were so used to their power that all they had to do was kind of raise a finger, because that's very similar to the meeting that he had with the people at his old high school, where he found, you know, the priest that he knew had abused someone, and he goes and talks to them and they're all like, oh, well, come on, man. You know, the school, you don't want to attack the school.
An alumni,
and the only thing that silences everyone is when he says, gee, don't you feel lucky you weren't on the hockey team? I do.
Yeah.
And I played a different sport. They just kind of have to sit there, but it's the fat cat businessmen. They don't have any problems with this. Because the other thing that I was thinking is, at one point they read these letters, and I remember reading about these thinking, what? Where it's the unsealed documents that they finally can get their hands on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. After they've been disappeared by the church. That was the most the church ever did, is they disappeared 14 documents that got refiled.
Mm-hmm. From the court, right.
From the court. Mm-hmm. From the court. So they had people pulling strings.
Right.
Was that mother who said, well, I have 7 children who've been messed with, but, you know, I believe in Holy Mother Church. And I'm like, oh, could you find a worse way to illustrate, or, you know, better way to illustrate this, really? And I'm like saying to my husband, who does this? Why wouldn't somebody have said something? I said, you know, if there were 5 boys in Tom's family, I was like, if something had happened to one of you guys, your dad wouldn't have cared what the priest or the diocese said. He'd have been down at the police station and he wouldn't have been fobbed off with, you know, a little settlement and an apology. And he goes, yes, but these priests were predators. They were picking kids from at-risk families.
Mm.
And I went, oh my gosh, that's right.
Interesting. Yeah.
I can't blame the families. I'm blaming in essence, at that point, I'm blaming the victim, because I don't have a full understanding of that. And we've been shown time after time after time, from the examples they gave us anyway, you know, they were like, any predator, here's the weak one.
Right.
Here's the one without the herd, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that was kind of off topic.
Good point. Yeah. No, it's good.
And then, yeah, that was a weak point.
Yeah, that was a weak point. Yeah, and then the other one was John Slattery's character, who he played Ben Bradley Jr.
Yeah.
And we discussed this earlier, but I felt that there was strong foreshadowing with him that was never resolved.
Agreed.
It's like, you know, the director gave us the impression that he knew something that, you know, I was expecting the scene where, you know, yes, damn it, I've got boxes of evidence in my office, you know, or whatever. Yeah. But it never materialized. You know, whatever they were doing with him never came to be.
What's that Chekhov thing about, don't show me a gun if you're not going to shoot it by the end of the story, or something?
Something like that.
They were shown 2 guns that never went off. Because my husband felt the same way.
Okay.
I said, wow, what's the church going to do? And he's like, well, I never heard anything about this. We were very interested. And, you know, the boss, I said, I think when they talk about that box of stuff that disappeared, which they never brought up again.
Right, right.
And I'm like, if this is an editing problem or some choice like that, that cut some key line out, it was poor, because there was a lot of stuff building up.
Okay.
It never happened.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you feel the same way, because it just felt unresolved, both those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was a real letdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would like to say, though, that something, I mean, like I say, it's a good movie. They got a lot of things right. And one of the things I think they got so right was, first of all, casting Michael Keaton. I'm so glad he's acting again. I love him so much.
Yeah.
But he is, for us, he is the good man who stands up when he's discovered he's done something wrong, when he's discovered wrong is being done in general, and he's got the strength to manage his troops to make sure that it's an effective stance. You know, he's on solid ground. Mm-hmm. And where we're shown that is he doesn't really love the church. He doesn't hate it, but he's just not really Catholic anymore, right? Mm-hmm. But what he does love is his school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not rah-rah wearing the T-shirts and stuff, but you can see he has a real attachment to where he grew up and to his background and to his school. He's got his yearbooks. He's got these various things. And that meeting at the school when everybody's gently pressuring him is, to me, the inside look that you would have at the church when they're doing that to the families or the people who know about stuff. They were doing it to him.
Yeah.
And he wasn't combative, but he also wasn't bending. And he's the example of what we should all be when we discover something wrong. You don't stop. You find out what's going on. You get the proper authorities involved or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I like that. I really like that very much. I agree. Yeah. That was neat. And he even went to his friend there on, was it New Year's Eve or Christmas? I think it was New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And says, we need some confirmation here. And was willing to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was willing to burn his relationship with his friend. And by him doing that, his friend's conscience struck him because he didn't even use the arguments that you expected. Mm. Like, how can you think of these? Look at this picture of this kid. How can you, you know?
Right.
They showed us pictures of kids. But and it's funny because I was thinking about that later and I was going, okay, this is where you want to bring up the statistics of, you know, 5% of the people who were, you know, abused were minors and, you know, this kind of thing. And then you go, no, because those minors represent each soul. It doesn't matter the age of the person. If their trust has been broken like that, it's equally innocent and equally legitimate, I feel.
Yeah, I feel the same.
And it was a good, that's the thing of it being a good representation of sin. Every time you want to fall back into that comfort of the numbers, it's just as bad as the bishops or the other priests who, I think what they did after a while is they not only forgot, you know, the basic love one another commandment, but it's that thing of talking about the people, the city, the church, not Scott, not Julie, not individuals, who each of them matters. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Nicely put.
And it's what we do each time. I mean, on a lesser level. But each time that we forget about that and don't treat people with enough respect, each person, we're in a very small way, you know, you're committing that same sin of distancing yourself. I mean, you can't get invested in every single person. I get that. But the people that we have contact with, we should. And my gosh, the bishop's office met with those families.
Yeah.
Talk about abusing trust. Come on.
And they put out cookies. That was a... you remember that one?
What did my grandmother do or my mother do? She put out cookies.
She put out cookies, yeah.
Well, the other problem that it showed us is not a problem I've ever had, but several people, especially talking, they were victims and they were talking about it as from the kid's point of view. They're like, well, he was like God. The priest was paying attention to me. I was important. And that was the thing about putting out cookies for the, you know, the church when they come by to talk about abusing your kid.
Yeah.
And it's elevating the priest to a saintly level when none of us is saintly. We're all human beings. And that's not a problem I've ever had. And maybe it's because I came to the church late, although Tom never, you know, he's like, you know, what priests are doing is wonderful, but they're still human beings.
Yeah, and that, yeah, and they definitely are. You know, it's they are kind of set apart. Mm-hmm. You know, we want them to be more than they are. We want them to be saints, and you know, we want them to be better than us, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they are, they're people.
Yeah, and in, you know, it's funny. In a way, I had that same reaction and had to do a reality check of my own, because during one of the phone conversations when Sipes is talking about, you know, celibacy and the problems with the priests and all this stuff, and he goes, and I meant to look up the exact words, but it's something like, you know, well, 50% of priests at one time have not been celibate. And I'm like, what? No. Mm-hmm. For I refuse to accept that. Priests are better than that. And that's when I went, wait, am I doing that very thing of they're like God and they can't fail and I'm defending this rule at the risk of the people? And so I started looking it up and said, oh, wait, I found a couple of articles. This guy was a very famous consultant about that time, naturally. And this is based on his own survey.
Mm-hmm.
And celibacy at any one time included things like masturbation or internet porn or – and so I'm like, well, hold on. My definition – I get that those are sexual problems and sins, but this is not what I think of as celibacy, you know, like with a woman or with, you know, with another person. And so – and then – so I'm telling my husband and he goes, well, also – he says – okay, at any one time and at what point of their life? And he goes, and also, is this reproducible research?
Yeah.
Because if it's not reproducible.
That's the thing too. Yeah. That's
yeah.
What I and found so as I was, well.
Yeah. And so I kind of came away feeling vindicated.
Yeah.
But then I also realized the danger within myself. I also have those pedestals I put people on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There was one thing that was said by him on the phone, and, he definitely implied that celibacy was part of the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if that's true, that, you know, that would, you know, I needed to look into that because I'm like, well, you know, is that really true?
Yeah.
And I found that there is not evidence that celibacy is a risk factor for sexual abuse. The rates of sexual abuse do not seem to be higher among celibate priesthood as among other public offices.
I think even in the general population too, isn't it? I mean, because a lot
from
of
what I've found and
happens in families.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, one is too many. and you know, that's why I hate defending it like this because it's like, you know, it's just, but the thing is, you know, it's being used to attack, you know, for whatever reason, why would you attack celibacy? But people are, and they're saying, well, you know, priests should not be celibate for a list of reasons. And one of the reasons is, you know, sexual abuse of minors, but it doesn't seem to be a risk factor for sexual abuse of minors. You know, you can keep arguing, that priests shouldn't be celibate, but that's not one of the things that you should bring up because it doesn't increase that likelihood.
No, because across the general population. And that's why when you look at teachers or counselors or families or, you know, he said 6% and they're like 6%. And he never goes, well, that's the number for everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, you
Which
don't want to say, yeah, that I'm just like, how can it be 6%? That's low, but high. I mean, that's terrible. But yeah, again, and in that sense, that's making priests, that's putting them on a different pedestal or maybe lower down in a hole. I don't know. But, and as far as celibacy being attacked, our society right now is so sexualized.
Oh,
you know,
man.
Sex is looked at as it's like having a good meal. It's just a healthy thing to do. Well, that's an insult to my daughters and my son-in-law who, you know, they're not disordered and they took that very seriously or do take it. My daughter.
No. And there's no question. And to have a celibate priesthood, I mean, one of the things, I mean, there's many things. But one of the things that is amazing about it is that they stand in defiance in a way to what the culture at large thinks is so important.
That's a good point.
It's like I'm standing here and I've chosen not to engage in that at all. And yeah. And you know, everybody else, it's just so odd that it must be wrong. There must be something wrong with that. If having, you know, sex is healthy, then not having it must be unhealthy. But at the very least, it tells you that it's not the most important thing in the world.
That's an excellent point. Well, and because think about what people put themselves through as far as stringency on other things. These diets, like the non-gluten diet for people who don't have celiac disease, that's not, I mean, or, you know, oh, we celebrate people who do Iron Man things. And I'm just like, that talk about abuse. Now, but everybody's like, oh, it's for fitness. It shows your strength of will. It shows your determination. I'm all about that. I mean, I'm not all about that. No. We're not talking about me. But I'm like, fine. If that's what you want to do, it's not hurting you. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hurting anybody else. You can do it. It does something for you also on probably an internal level. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But that's celebrated because that's something that we like. So it's just a societal.
Yeah. Preferences, prejudice. Right. Just, what we're into at the moment. And it's just not in right now. Not to be obsessed with the sexual nature of everyone.
And so kind of that, this movie in that way, it does shine also the spotlight on the things that aren't understood about the Catholic Church. So other things are attributed to them, you know. Like one of the things that... And this was the thing that got me. They kept saying, it goes all the way to the top. It's the Vatican and the Pope. And they didn't keep saying it. But three times it was tossed out, once by somebody who was very angry. It was the Mark Ruffalo character, so of course he's going to go there. But they would just kind of toss it out, and it was kind of like they were throwing it against the wall to see if it would stick, because they're like, do you have proof for this? No. But I just know it, and I'm going to have proof sometime. And I'm like, so they just let it sit there. Yeah. And then when it gets brought up two more times, I'm like, okay. What you guys don't understand, and I get that it doesn't look like this because I still have trouble with how Cardinal Law was treated after he left in disgrace. He was given a highly important sounding ceremonial job at the Vatican. And you're just like, really? And what I do understand, because I went and looked into that too, because I'm like, you know, this still bugs me. I know I was told that it was kind of a disgrace. I'm like, but I think the problem with him is it was pretty early on in all this in terms of the Vatican knowing what to do and paying attention to it. And it was also John Paul II who had a lot of problems. I mean, he's a saint. I love him. Personally, I love him. But he was not perfect. And one of his blind spots was he could not get the U.S. bishops to do what he wanted. He's on record as having been heard complaining about the U.S. bishops. And he never, you know, put it to them. It took Pope Benedict to do that.
Yeah, and Pope Benedict did do that, didn't he?
Yeah.
didn't he gather them together pretty much immediately?
Yeah. He was the head of the... kind of the law arm of the church, essentially. I can't remember the Divine Congregation for something.
He
was the head of it, and they called him the Pope's Rottweiler. And the thing is, though, he was so horrified by everything that was going on. He read every letter that was sent to them personally.
Wow.
And he took it very personally. And one of the things he was overheard saying, and this is in Peggy Noonan's book, called John Paul the Great, because she converted during all this also. And
which is a great book.
Oh, yeah. It's in fact, I got it from – I have it requested from the library because I said it's been too long since I've read it. But the quote that she has in there, which I had hoped to read but I don't have it, is something like, you know, Cardinal Ratzinger at the time talking to another cardinal as they're gathering for the enclave to vote for the new Pope. And he's like, they were children. children. These were priests. And there was like anguish in his voice. And he's going, this is filth. You know, he knew.
Yeah.
And so he did all these things to start changing it. But it's like a huge ocean liner.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to turn it around. And as Americans, you know, you want the laws to go in place. You want things to change. And what you forget is that it's not this tightly run modern business. Like the bishops all report directly to the Pope. They don't report to the cardinals, who report to the cardinals, just a different kind of an elevated bishop. An archbishop is an elevated bishop. I mean, the priests report to the bishop.
Yeah.
But you've got to get all these people going. And there's no one set of rules that makes them go. I mean, now, you know, they're doing stuff. They're turning people in. They're showing records to people. But they had to get it all in place and change it.
Yeah.
And that's the best explanation I can come up with, because cardinal law is the worst and totally lost his way. And I have to always pray for him.
Yeah.
Just like I have to pray for Bishop Grauman, who was our own personal example of that. Because I personally dislike those people so much. That's a problem of my own, too.
Yeah.
I can't remain dispassionate about their sin. I can't stand them for their pride.
Yeah, it's hard to pray for people you wish would slip on a banana peel, says Mother Angelica. Yeah. But isn't that so true, though? It's that's one of the things that we learn. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, wow. Well, good. Well, I'm glad you liked the movie.
Yeah, it was.
There's so much to talk about. Yeah. Yeah, we've gone an hour, so.
Oh, my gosh,
Yeah, that was a very quick hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think this movie was great. I thought it was good. Did you see All the President's Men?
When it came out. That was more revelatory.
Back in bell-bottom times. Bell-bottoms for everybody.
At the movies.
That's funny.
It was occurring to me that this, you know, is compared to All the President's Men. And I remember watching that. And the difference is that nobody was on Nixon's side when we saw that movie. It's all pretty
that is
new.
So true. Like,
go. Mm-hmm. And this one, if you're Catholic, you're more conflicted. Or maybe if you're not Catholic, you're more angry. I mean, I don't know. But I think it does. The name is perfect. It shines a good spotlight on this. And you can then go look into the other stuff yourself.
Right.
They couldn't do everything.
Yeah. Agreed. All right.
Yeah. Really. Thank you for choosing it.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for watching it. I know it felt like the right thing to do. And it was like, you know, I was like, okay, I'm not sure I want to talk about this, but we ought to.
Well, I would really quickly just say, it occurs to me that there are three other movies that kind of broaden or supplement this and give you a lot to think about or talk about. And two of them we've watched. One is I Confess.
Yeah.
So if you want to see what a real priest, the ideal priest is like, the other is The Paper that we watched.
Oh yeah. Michael Keaton again.
And Michael Keaton again, but in the spotlight he's playing, was it Duvall's part? Is that right?
Robert Duvall's part?
Part, who he's the editor. Uh-huh. He's the guy in charge now.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But The Paper, if you want to look at how a paper runs and getting a story and all the other things, that's, you know, more lighthearted. But and then the other one, from the point of view of the church behaving very badly and the aftermath, is Philomena.
Philomena. I still haven't seen that. I need to watch that.
Well, I felt, coming up to that, I didn't want to watch it. It was selected by one of the movie groups. And I came away from it the way I did Spotlight. It shone a valuable light on the victim. And the victim, played wonderfully, of course, by Judi Dench, is a wonderful balance or fulcrum, I guess, between the idealized, I would say, bad things of the church and the idealized angry person, atheist, who's mad at the church.
I gotcha.
She is in the middle. And she kind of shows you a really interesting and, I would say, good way to try to be.
Okay. Yeah. I will watch that movie. I must. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Well, good. All right. Well, next up, it's a little bit lighter.
A little bit.
We're going to talk about Doomsday Book by Connie Willis.
Such a good book.
Yeah, cool. I'm excited to read that again.
I haven't read it in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while for me too. But I look forward to talking about it.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, thank you for bearing with us through this movie.
You bet. All right, well, take care.
Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.